Sahanavavatu, Sahanavunaktu, Sahavirjankaravavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Okay, let's chant. Let's just for now do 42, 43, 44. Mm. We might do more, but let's do those, try those.
Yatha munja dishi kaivam.
Atma yuktya samudritaha.
Atma yuktya samudritaha.
Shariratriyat. Tritaya dhirayhi.
Sharira tritaya dhirayhi.
Param brahmai, param brahmai vajayate.
Param brahmai vajayate.
Para paratmano revam.
Para paratmano revam.
Yuktya sambhavitaikata.
Yuktya sambhavitaikata.
Tattvamasyati vakyaisa.
Tattvamasyati vakyaisa.
Bhagatyagena lakshyate.
Bhagatyagena lakshyate.
Jagato yattu padanam.
Jagato yattu padanam. Maya madaya tamasim.
Nimittam shuddha sattvam tam.
Nimittam shuddha sattvam tam.
Uchyate brahma tat gira.
Uchyate brahma tat gira.
So repeat after me. Yatha.
Yatha.
Munjat.
Munjat.
Ishika.
Ishika.
Evam.
Evam.
Atma.
Atma.
Yuktya.
Yuktya.
Samudritaha.
Samudritaha.
Sharira.
Sharira.
Tritayat.
Tritayat.
Dhirahi.
Dhirahi.
Param Brahmaiva.
Param Brahmaiva.
Param Brahma.
Param Brahma.
Eva.
Eva.
Jayate.
Jayate.
See this word yatha. Yatha means just as. So just as this, similarly that. You see yatha. Yatha, just as, tatha, similarly. So here's yatha. They don't always put the corollary there, but at least one of them is there. So yatha, just as. Now, munjat. Munjat is a type of grass, and it has a thick husk on it, relatively thick husk, and then a very tender stalk. And the idea is that from this thicker husk, you can delicately pull out that kind of tender stalk from the husk. Okay, so the munjat. The munja is the type of, is the grass, the stalk, that has the stalk. And then the ishika is the stem that you can pull out, right? So that little stalk that you can pull out from the husk. So here, munjat, ishika. Ishika, so the munjat from this husk, this munjat grass, this ishika, this delicate, tender stem, stalk can be pulled out. So evam, so here we have yata, just as the ishika can be pulled out of the munja stalk, okay? Evam, like that, in the same manner, same as tata, evam, in that manner, atma, yuktya, the self, one, atma, the self, yuktya, by logic, the anvayavyatireka logic that we've just been through, so by that logic, samudritaha, that atma is though extracted, pulled out, separated from the panchakoshas, the three shariras, right, the three bodies that we have, physical, subtle, causal bodies, three states of experience, waking, dream, deep sleep. In all of these prakriyas that we're working on now, those are the yukti, those are the logics that we use, the teaching, the prakriyas which are logical. We use those to differentiate as though pull out the little stem from the ishika from the munja grass. Okay. So we're not physically pulling out the atma, but but through viveka, you know, through the use of viveka and the use of these prakriyas, we are separating the self from these upadis that are as though enclosing us. They're not really enclosing us, but this body is enclosed and it has a content and it separates me from space and from all of you. And so the atma, in fact, is not enclosed, has never been enclosed, but because of ajnanam, because of the what we call mutual superimposition that's a result of the ajnanam, we take ourselves to be this, and so we're as though enclosed by this. This becomes as though a kosha. Even though the atma is not enclosed by anything, the whole universe exists in me, so I'm certainly not enclosed, but from the standpoint of these upadis, the panchakoshas, the three shariras, it seems to be enclosed. That's why we call these things koshas or shariras, bodies, or koshas, coverings. So by this logic of the anvayavyatireka, finding the invariable amongst all the variables, the one that we can't get rid of, that we can't dismiss, that we cannot change, that we cannot cover. These are all good meditation words. Who is inside that you can't cover? Who is inside that you can't get rid of? It's the truth. There is, your being is something that is invariable. You can't touch it, you can't change it, you can't cover it, you can't cut it, you can't do anything to it. It is always exactly the same. And Maya, it's another thing to understand here, is that Maya is mithya. That means that the Maya is a different order of reality. And the Maya, the mithya order of reality, can't touch the satyam order of reality. Sometimes in these Prakarana Granthas, these explanatory texts, and Swamiji, of course, uses this example of, say you're walking along and your shadow's walking along right next to you. Say it's you and your shadow, right? What can the shadow do? Mm-hmm. You and your shadow are taking a walk. It's wonderful to have the company of your shadow. But what can the shadow do? It's a totally different order of reality. It can't touch you in any way, you know? And so like that, this entire creation can't touch me in any way. It's a different order of reality. My dream can't touch me in any way. You know, you can wake up from the dream and you can be thinking about it, you know, and kind of shocked by your dream. Oh, I had this horrible dream last night. So you can have an emotional reaction to your dream or something like that. But the dream character cannot touch you, right? The dream world doesn't superimpose itself on this world, right? It's its own order of reality. Your imagination is its own order of reality. It can't touch you in any way. But if you're identified with a character in it, then you're having all of the emotional reactions and everything that goes on when you identify with something going on here. The emotions that take place, you know, have a certain reality. But the characters and the entire dream itself doesn't do anything to you, nor can it. It's a different order of reality. And that's another thing that's important to understand when we are just doing contemplation and trying to do this viveka between me, between myself, and all of these experiences I'm having, like a viveka between me and my body. My body is mitya. Nama rupa, name and form is mitya. What distance is there between mitya and satyam? It's like saying, what distance is there between the snake and the rope? Between the pot and the clay? There is no space, there is no distance at all. And yet, this viveka can take place, you know? But it's a strange kind of viveka. It's a strange kind of viveka, because what I have to recognize, I have to be able to see that the clay, you know, has its own order of reality different than the pot. And the pot has no being whatsoever apart from the clay. That's what I have to see here. I'm of a different order of reality, which my body, mind, sense organs, and the whole universe depend on completely, 100%, for this universe being, the being of my body, the being of the prana, the being of my mind. So the Sat-Chit-Atma, me, this conscious being, I am what is actually here, you know. And so how to do that viveka between one order of reality and another? From the standpoint of the self, there is no viveka to be done. Because from my standpoint, there is only me here, from the standpoint of consciousness. But then from the standpoint of this maya, this body, mind, sense organs, I can differentiate my mitya upadis from their satyam self. And what's interesting, you can do that, and we do that differentiation. But if you try to make a space, you know, between your body, mind, sense organs, and yourself, you can't make that space. There is no space. There isn't a self over here and a body over here. Because the body is mitya. It has no independent being of its own. That means I am itself. I just have to differentiate, be able to differentiate the truth of the body, mind, sense organs, you know, from them. And it's not that hard to do in this sense, except for your own, you know, resistance. But when we're just kind of objective, the thing is that everything within mitya, within the maya, is mitya, is continually changing. Even if you try to sit still, you know, keeping the body still, of course it's still breathing, it's still shifting around, you know. And then you try to keep your mind still. That doesn't work. You can kind of keep it still. You can keep bringing your mind back. You can be objective to the other thoughts and the other experiences that are passing through. They don't hurt the self at all, so you can just be objective, let them all pass through, let the body make its little wiggles and shifts, let the different types of emotions and vrittis and thoughts just come and go, you know? Because that's the reality. You can't take a snapshot, you know? Okay, let's just take a snapshot and hold it there. No, we can't do that. You can hold something for some minuscule amount of time. But that's why it's not that hard to differentiate yourself from maya. Because maya is always shifting. Your mind is shifting. Your buddhi is shifting. You know, your emotions are shifting. Your prana is shifting. The body is shifting. And you are not. One thing is not shifting. And that one thing is me. That's another thing. You know, I can objectify the body. This is all teaching methodology, just kind of explained. I can objectify this body. Subject, object. I'm the subject, not the object. Always. I can objectify my breath. I'm the subject, not the object. I can objectify my emotions. I'm the subject, not the object. The object is always changing. But so say I'm objectifying the thoughts and the moods and the feelings that are passing through my mind, and I shift back and forth to me, the one who is not changing at all, who I am just the presence, the being, the me, in which these changing experiences are taking a shift back and forth to the one who doesn't change, who can't change, who I can't force to change. Bhagavan can't even change. I go back and forth between myself and these shifting experiences. So these prakriyas are just trying to point out to you these shifting experiences and help you to have that differentiate them from you. And that's the thing. Because the relationship between satyam, you, the conscious being, and these upadis and the world, there's no distance. There's no distance. So it's a matter of identifying that which is changing, colorful, doing all kinds of things, dual, all of these things, from that which is in exactly the same place, because there's no space between satyam and nitya, but it is not doing any of those things. I simply am. All experiences are taking place in silent, the silent ananda or wholeness of myself. So this viveka has to happen for us. So here, he says, by this anvayavyatireka logic, and then I just listed some of these prakriyas, the panchakosha viveka and the avastatraya sakshi, waking state, the three states of experience. He says, by these, the atma is extracted, right? By knowledge, really, by this understanding, yourself is extracted from these upadis. Extracted means nothing happens. You just recognize. The extraction is recognition, right? So through this recognition, the atma is known. So it says sharira, the second line, sharira tritayat dhiraha param brahmaiva jayate. So from extracting from what? From the three shariras, the five koshas that are included in the three shariras, in the three bodies, the waking, the physical body, the gross body, the subtle body, and the causal body. Who is it extracted by? Having extracted them by the dhira. The dhiras are those people that have some significant amount, enough, I would say enough, adhikarityam, you know, viveka, vairagya, shama, etc. Shama, dhamma, paritiksha, shanta, samadham, if you memorize all that. Mamukshitam. Okay, so you have enough to be a mamuksha, you know. And you're a dhira. If that mamukshitam is there, you're not fooling around. You live your life. You live your the life of your prarabdha, whatever that is. And enjoy your life. You don't have to say, okay, well, now that I'm a mumuksha, I have to stop living my life. That won't work. Okay, you live your life from the birth to the death. The prarabdha unfolds for you. And so as you're living your life, at one point, you hook back up with this teaching. So you hook back up with this teaching, and now from this point on, that becomes what is most significant, even though you go on living your life. You know, but everything becomes a sadhana, as opposed to a desire for your happiness. I have to have this so I can be happy. It becomes a sadhana. It means how can I enjoy and be present to all of these experiences without thinking that my whole life is dependent on them? How can my desires become, you know, non-binding desires? You know, how can my mind realize, own up my knowledge? So that's sadhana. My mind's not owning up my knowledge either. The knowledge isn't clear yet, so I need more shravana, which is fine. We do shravana until we get that clarity. And then the other problem that goes along with the shravana is this antakarana shuddhi problem, you know, which always upsets us. Our emotional reactions and all these type of things, you know, cause a lot of pain. But that's good. It's good they cause a lot of pain because that says, okay, I have to deal with this. Yeah, so we're all dealing. No, I'm getting around it. Yeah. Okay, so sharira tritayat is in the fifth case. It means from this group of three shariras, the dhiras, those persons who are adhikaris, qualified students for this knowledge, they gain param brahma. Param brahma eva jayate. I mean, they gain means they gain through knowledge. You're always Brahman. You're never going to become Brahman. You're already Brahman, but you don't know it. And so it's called in Sanskrit praptasya praptihi, the gain of the gained. Praptasya praptihi. You have to gain the gain of the gained. So one of my Guru Bhais wrote a book called that. Praptasya praptihi.
Is that supposed to work?
Okay. Everybody clear on that? Let's do the next verse. Verse 43. Repeat after me. Para. Apara.
Apara.
Atmanaha.
Atmanaha.
No. Atmanoho.
Atmanoho.
Yeah. Para. Apara. Atmanoho.
Para.
Para.
Apara.
Atmanoho.
Atmanoho.
Evam.
Evam.
Yuktya.
Yuktya.
Sambhavita.
Sambhavita.
Oh, actually it's Sambhavita.
Sambhavita.
Ekata.
Ekata.
Tet.
Tet.
Tvam.
Tvam.
Asi.
Asi.
Adi.
Adi.
Vakyaihi.
Vakyaihi.
Sa.
Sa.
Bhagatyagena.
Bhagatyagena.
Lakshyate.
Lakshyate.
Okay. Here it says for para apara. It's paratma, it's like parama atma, and the apara atma. Parama atma is Brahman, the apara atma is the jiva. Okay, so is that how it says? Paramatma, jiva atmanoho ekata abhinnata. Sambhavita ekata. Para and apara atmana. This is in the dual, genitive dual. So by logic, the oneness, the ekata of Brahman and the jiva, you know, of Ishwara and the jiva. That's basically the paramatma and the apara atma. Apara means less. Parama means more. So the supreme atma and the apara, the limited atma. There's no supreme atma and limited atma. So then we're saying the Ishwara and Jiva. So the self of Ishwara and Jiva. So we say that aikata, that identity between the Jiva and Ishwara, Bhavita, is established. Bhavita, Sambhavita, really comes into being, becomes realized, yuktya, by the logic, by that logic in this manner. So in this manner, we're going to see what that manner is, with this anvayavyatireka. How we've used it and what that has to do with the Mahavakya. So here's the Mahavakya. Tat one Mahavakya. Tat tvam asi. You are that. Okay. Adi. Adi means there are several Mahavakyas. Mahavakya means the great statement. The great statement means what is the essential tat parya? What is the essential vision of the Upanishads? That's the Mahavakya. Is this essential vision? The essential vision is that you are Ishwara, you are Brahman. All of the Upanishads are only about teaching, making the student realize this. This is the Mahavakya, the whole teaching is included in that. So, but to understand the Mahavakya, you need a teaching methodology because, say, if I say the Tat Tvamasi, you, O Jiva, you are Ishwara. Well, you're not Ishwara, right? You, the limited jiva, are not the limitless Ishwara. So that means in order for this Mahavakya to work, there has to be, or to make sense, there has to be a teaching methodology that is used. And actually, what we call this teaching methodology now, what we're going to get into, is really just called, there's a series of lakshanas. Lakshanas means how we indicate something that with words that don't naturally mean that. So, for instance, if I say, you are that, O Jiva, you are Ishvara, well, on the what we call the Vachyarta, the immediate meaning of the word, that doesn't make any sense. So there has to be an implied meaning of the word. And so we find that in our language, there are different types of implications, right? I gave you an example a few days ago, which is a stock example. See the red running. The red doesn't run, right? And so you have to add something. You have to add the red horse. See the red horse running. Your mind automatically does it. That's one type. Then say if I say, my house... Or I could say Swamiji's ashram is right on the Ganga, you know. Well, it's not sitting on the Ganga, you know. And nor do you think it does, because you switch the word Ganga for the bank of the Ganga. And you just automatically do it. You know exactly what it's meant. So that's a lakshana, the Vacharta. Say if you took the Vacharta, that means the immediate meaning of the word. I mean, it's hard for us to do in language because we do this all of the time. You know, we add what's needed to be added, we switch what's needed to be switched just automatically. But just think, you know, if I said to you, oh, look at the red running, and you go, I don't see any red running out there. You know? Red doesn't run. How could you say that red is running? We don't do that. Right? We know exactly what it's meant. We don't say, you know, Swamiji's beautiful place is sitting right on the Ganga. It's right on the Ganga. Is it a boat? You know? So we know. He's on the banks. There's a displacement. Now this is a replacement of the words. This is a different type of what we call lakshana. And it's called Bhagatyaga lakshana. So here, Tatumasyadi Vakyahi sa Bhagatyagena Lakshate. Bhagatyagena. By getting rid of a part. Tyaga means abandoning. If you're a tyagi, you're somebody who's renounced everything. You know? So here you're renouncing, you're getting rid of bhaga. Bhaga is a part of something. So you're going to have to, if I say you are that, O Jiva, you are Ishvara. There is a conflict there, you know. The conflict are the things that are opposed, like what is opposed? Ishvara is sarvajnaha, all knowledge, and I have om alpajnaha. Ishvara is shakti matvam, all shakti, all power. I am alpa, so sarva alpa. Sarva means all, alpa means little tiny bit, right? So I have a little bit of shakti. Bhagavan has all shakti, all capacity. So Bhagavan is infinite upadhi, an infinite upadhi. I am a limited upadhi. These are what we call viruddha. They're opposed to each other, you know. And so if I'm saying you are Ishvara, in order for that to be real or to make sense, these things that are in opposition, opposed to each other, have to be dropped. And so how are they dropped? Well, the first thing is, and we'll see as we go on here, the first thing is you have to understand exactly what is meant by the word tvam, you. And we have to define it. And we have to define the word tat, that, right? And then say we've completely defined these two words, tvam and tat, then we're going to have to eliminate the parts that are different and keep the part that is the same. So here, keeping that in mind, here it says, between the jiva, para apara atmanoho, between the self of the jiva, between the jiva and Ishvara, in this manner, by the logic which we've been giving, that oneness between the jiva and Ishvara is established, becomes known, becomes recognized. So here, tat tvam asi adivakyahi, by it becomes known by the vakyas, by the statements, tat tvam asi, etc. There are many Mahavak is Aham Brahmasmi is one, Tat Tvamasi, you are that, Prajnanam Brahma, Brahman is consciousness. Yeah, there's several. There's several, and there's four others. Another one I have to think of. I can't think of it right now. But there's many more than that. You know? They are statements that show that identity. And so here, by these vakyas, that identity between the jiva and Ishvara is implied, is pointed to, lakshyate, by bhagatyagena, by giving up the parts, tyaga, by renouncing the parts that are opposed to each other. So he'll be giving, an example of that. So if you think about it, just before we go into other examples, and there's two more verses, so you may be able to do this. If you think about it, when we use all of these prakriyas, the panchakosha, the drikdrisha viveka, the three states of experience, the waking, dream, deep sleep, we are always left with a self, the atma, which is free of all of those experiences. Right? The atma that is free of those experiences can't be limited by the experiences it is not. Sounds like a duh, but it's true. If I am have been differentiated by an experience, that there's like a subject-object differentiation, and the experience, there's two ways to see it. The experience, whatever it is objectified, so there's a subject-object relationship there. That's one major thing. So I recognize that fact, that there's a subject-object relationship there. And number two, is this will be three and four, but for now, number two, what I am objectifying changes. Well, I am aware of it. The object itself is modifying, is changing, and I'm not. If it's changing and I'm not, then I can't be that. Even if I'm sitting here in the waking state, you know, and I've objectified all of you, that's one thing, subject-object relationship. But the other thing is you could all walk out the door and I would still be here. So I'm not you. You know, it's very obvious. But it's the same thing when I'm sitting, objectifying my body. There's a subject-object relationship which I have to be aware of. There is a subject, there is an object. The body is an object of your sense perception, actually. And so once you're aware of that, how is it possible for the one who is aware of something to be that thing? And how is it possible also for that thing, if that thing which I'm aware of comes in and out of my awareness and I stay here, then again, how can I be that thing? Because I'm not aware of it. I'm not aware of it anymore. Or say even the wonderful, this is like the Vipassana meditation of the Buddhist. If you just sit quietly and let all of these changes take place, don't do anything. Just let them take place. All of the thoughts in your mind coming through, the emotions rising up, discomfort in the body, all of this, just let them be. And then recognize, this pushes it a little farther than usually Vipassana does. Vipassana just allows you to kind of see the transitory nature of all of this and just be there with it. Where we will turn our attention, and maybe some Vipassana does this too, I'm not sure. We turn our attention, the Buddha's attention, to that differentiation. These things are all going on, and I am absolutely still. That's a viveka, right? And so, if once that viveka is made, then what I had taken to be the tvam, me, you are that, tat tvamasi, right? What I had taken to be me, or you, so I'm going to use me, okay? What I had taken to be me, I now recognize is really a misidentification of myself with upadis, with conditioning adjuncts that actually I have a subject-object relationship with and which are coming and going and changing. I see that. It's aparoksha jnanam in the sense that my being is here and it is changeless and all of these things are coming and going, coming and going. That is my direct, immediate experience. And so am I the one who remains, or am I the one that comes and goes? Obviously, if it goes, if it changes, I'm not that. Just think in terms of any experience. If it's gone, it's not you. You know? If it comes and goes, it's not you. If it's objectifiable, it's not you. So all of these prakriyas have to take you to that ultimate recognition of you as free from all of these changing upadis and changing world. And when you make that recognition now as a jiva, what happens is that myself is no longer limited by these upadis. The upadis limit each other. Like my body is not your body, my sense organs are not your sense organs. They limit each other. They are different, you know. These bodies are all different, our experiences are all different. But when I get to the level of the self, those limiting differences, you know, don't apply anymore. And so when that's the case, and with this bhagatyaga, you eliminate the limitations. You eliminate the things that differentiate, and just as just within this room, you eliminate the things that differentiate me from you. If I eliminate all of those things because they're objectifiable and changing, then what is going to differentiate me from you? So if you get rid of your body as an object, you give it to the creation, basically. You get rid of your mind and your sense organs and your prana and your relationships and your knowledges and your ignorances. All of these things belong to the creation. You know, and we're all doing that at the same time, say, together. And then you realize that space itself is known. Right? Time is known. Where is now it's time to recognize who I am? So now we're trying to all recognize, well, who's left? Well, I am. I'm the subject. The subject is the one who's left. The me, myself, is left. The one who had taken myself to be these same objects that I'm now objectifying. I've taken myself to be that, but now I'm objectifying it, and objectifying like the body, I realize, oh, I'm not that after all. It's a new upadi. I've never been that. It's something that I objectify. So I am the one left standing. I'm the one who remains after the very I that is here. And remember the meditation where you just say, you just let yourself be the body, because the body has no being apart from you. But now we're going to take the body off, and the sense organs off, and the prana off, and the mind off, and the buddhi off, and the anandamaya kosha off. All the koshas come off. We get completely undressed. And as I, who's left? It's me. But now the problem is, okay, there's me and there's you. There's me and there's you. But what makes me different from you? Why am I different from you? Well, we're different. We're different. We're completely different. We are, in terms of the upadis, the things that we've already taken off. We are different in terms of the dresses we've taken off. But when all of those dresses have been taken off, all of the upadis and the time and space itself are objectified, what is going to separate this self that is me from the self that is you? What? Just think of one thing. Ajnanam. Ajnanam is objectified. Space. No, space is objectified. Time is objectified. Think of one thing to make there be two of us. Especially when you get rid of space. That's really serious. There's nothing. And so say you come upon that understanding that you are of a different order of reality. You don't exist. Your being is not an object within this dream of a creation. You know? This is Ishvara, and this body, mind, sense organs is within Ishvara, and it's full of diversity and difference. But from the standpoint of myself, how can I be two? How can there be two of me? And so in this Bhagatyaga Lakshana, What if I just say, instead of saying, you know, I am Ishwara, I say, I am you. It's actually exactly the same. Because what has to happen, if I say, I am you, we have to remove from each of us the upadis which differentiate me from you. Because from the standpoint of our bodies, I'm not you. If I take myself to be the body, I am not you. I'm different from you. If I take myself to be the mind and you do too, we're different. If you take yourself to be the prana or the buddhi or whatever, or even the ahankara, we're different. Yeah. But if I'm talking about, if I get rid of all these viruddha means all these opposing factors that are all, every single one of them, objectifiable by both of us, then how can I separate me from you for there to be two? There's nothing there to separate. Space, air, fire, water, earth. These are the five elements that project as the creation as Hiranyagarbha and as Virat. Space is included. Right? And then there's all this Panchikarana and the Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas and all that. All belongs to Maya. Right? All is objectifiable. The Maya comes from what? The Maya. That Maya conditioning adjunct, we can say, that Maya and unmanifest condition, where is it located? In me, in Brahman. And how many Brahmans are there? When Maya is in unmanifest condition, we call it Ishwara, it's in unmanifest condition. That means there's no manifestation of the creation. There is one self, Brahman. There's not two Brahmans, right? There's one Brahman, plus this Shakti that we call Maya, which is Mithya. And so this Mithya Shakti, this Maya, comes as the entire creation becomes, you know, it becomes Hiranyagarbha and Virat, and then you have the Vishwas and the Jivas in the physical creation, and you've got the Jivas in the subtle creation as Tejasa. And then you have the Jivas as Prajna within Ishwara, in the unmanifest condition. But all of that duality, all those bodies, all of those jivas, Ishwara identified with the whole, it's all Maya, it's all Mithya. All of that duality is fine, it's beautiful, it's like an infinite mandala. It's nothing wrong, it's just the only thing wrong with it is the ajnanam, which is causing pain to you who are Brahman. It's as though, from the standpoint of these upadis, you know, we've as though forgotten who we were. And that forgetfulness is beginningless. Because as long as I don't have self-knowledge, then I'm just experience myself as a conscious being, because my consciousness is aparoksha. It's direct, immediate. I'm always the same. I'm always here, you know. And anything that has the sattva, like my mind and sense organs and sense of touch, you know, obviously, because of the ajnanam, I just take myself, all of this whole package here, to be a conscious being. And my sense of touch doesn't extend beyond this skin. And so here I'm a conscious being, and then you're a conscious being, you're a conscious being, you're a conscious being, and space is not a conscious being. So if I have an imagination, space, air, fire, water, earth, and all of the individuals in it, they are all in my consciousness. Because I'm the Ishwara of my imagination. So here, one Brahman, one Paramatma, one self, which is me, when the Maya comes into manifestation, you know, divides up as the whole Ishwara Upadi, which is just limitless sarvagnitvam, all knowledge, omniscient, sarvashaktimatvam, all energy, all everything. It's everything. And that enjoys what? For its adhishtana, me, conscious being, which we call Brahman, because we're talking about myself now as I actually am, limitless. And then what do I recognize here when I remove all of these upadis? Because they're all objectified, they all belong in Maya. What is the nature of myself? It is also limitless conscious being, because anything that could limit it belongs to Maya. belongs to the creation, belongs to the jiva upadis. And so therefore, the Mahavakya, you are that, is you, O Atma, yourself, is Brahman. And the Maya Upadi and your Upadis within it are Mithya. There's complete differences between you as a jiva and the Ishvara Upadi. I mean, it's the limitless versus the limited. You know, there's definitely differences. And within the creation, difference. We're all completely different. On every level except the one that counts. And the one that counts is me, is the self. And so this is, you know, what we have to kind of get. That this very familiar me is your very familiar me. That I know you completely. If I know myself, I know you completely as I know myself. I know you, because there's only one me. As completely as I know myself, I know Ishvara. Unless Ishvara has ajnana and takes himself to be the upadi, I am this limitless upadi. No, it's just a mithya manifestation of Bhagavan. Beautiful. It's beautiful and wonderful and wondrous. Mm. But it doesn't divide us and it doesn't divide me. There's only one me. What is so wonderful about this is it twofold. What you need as a human being, so many of the poets say, there's beautiful poetry. All I want is to know you, O Lord. I want to know you. I want to be you. I want to unite with you. There's so many poems like that. Yeah. And when you gain knowledge, you recognize that Bhagavan, who Bhagavan actually is right here in your heart at all times as your being. The innermost being that you are, the Atma that you are, the self that you are, that is Bhagavan. Yeah. And so now take about from in terms of the self. Now take it from what, so in that way, you know, you are always with Bhagavan because that is yourself. Yourself is the self of Bhagavan. Bhagavan's self is yourself. You can say it either way. You don't want to say, I don't want to say that myself is the self of Bhagavan. That sounds so egotistical. So you could just say it like this. Bhagavan's self is yourself. That's what it is. And then, from the standpoint of the world, you know, this body, mind, sense organs, limited, is part and parcel of the Ishvara Upadi. I am part of Ishvara. I am part of Ishvara's story. You know, if I can use the word Virat, or Hiranyagarbha, or Ishvara standing for the whole manifestation. I am part of Ishvara like a cell in the body. You know? And my experience is through my limited sense organs is not going to be an experience of the entire creation. It's going to be limited by my limited mind, sense organs, body, time, space. It's limited in this way. But there's nothing I experience that is not Ishvara. So my life is contained in Ishvara. So your direct experience of Ishvara is your prarabdha karma. Right? And the prarabdha karma, the karmas that caused you to take this body and takes you all the way through to your death, event after event after event unfolding, you experience this flow of karma, which includes your body and mind and sense organs, but it includes the whole flow of your experience also. It's not just this body, or my body has some prarabdha karma. No. Your whole situation is a flow of prarabdha karma. The people you know, the jobs you have, the firings you've experienced, all of the ups and downs of the life, that's all the flow of the prarabdha karma that you find. So you can, for jnani, because you're not asking anything that Bhagavan to make you happy or to change things around so that you can be happy, because you have knowledge and your mind just sits with yourself happily and then responds to the prarabdha karma. You know, dharmically, because the dharma is what's natural to you. If you don't need something, what is your natural response to your situation is dharma, because that's Ishvara. Dharma is Ishvara. In fact, it's how do we worship Bhagavan? Right, by following dharma, because dharma is kind of like the skeleton of Ishvara. It's all of the laws. So what do you do if you're already happy? You'll naturally do dharma, because why would you want to hurt another person? It doesn't come up. That hurting another person, it comes up because something has threatened me. It's always that way. In fact, we think, because I want that, my desires are in the way. But if you analyze it, there's something I'm afraid of. And so instead of saying, it's because I had this desire, you could say that, but it's shallow. You can go deeper. You can say, what am I afraid of? Mm-hmm. What am I afraid of? That's a really good question to ask yourself. It takes you very deep that way. Because especially if you not have knowledge, because there's really nothing for you to be afraid of. Swamiji used to say, I always kind of carry it around with me, if it's yours, you'll get it. And if it's not, you won't. Simple. That's karma, And so if you're not worried about that because you already are enjoying the ananda of your being in terms of your fullness or your happiness, then what difference does it make? I just naturally do what's supposed to be done to the best of my ability. Because there's nothing in the way. That's where life becomes very simple. And very simple, very slowed down. But we've had beginningless lifetimes with that agnanam, and so it takes a while to get there. We always call it, there's an emotional lag time. It's an emotional lag time. Your knowledge becomes firmer and clearer and clearer, and yet you act like an agnani now and then. First of all, I really know, I really see, I really understand. Why am I acting like an agnani? Because there's an emotional lag time. And then you notice, the 6 months go by, I don't do that anymore. That's gone. I didn't realize it, but it dropped off. That's gone. A little while ago, that's not there anymore. You don't even notice that it's not there because it's not there, and then you remember. Yet that used to be an issue, and slowly, over time, that antakarana shuddhi, like the blossoming of a flower, takes place. It's a beautiful process. And we just enjoy Ishvara. We are Ishvara, we enjoy Ishvara. It's a wonder. You slow down and live in this creation, being with the other people who are sharing your prarabdha. Like right now, we're all sharing this. We all have the same, it's not the same prarabdha, but it's a shared prarabdha because we're in the same space. So these are, all of us are part of each other. Very intimate. It's very intimate. And less intimate are people on the street, but they're still people you pass by, so they're also part of your karma. It's interesting. But the people that we get to be with, those are very important people. They're part of us, And so we have to value them and take care of them, and they take care of us, whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. So, this Bhagatyaga Lakshana, this dropping off through Viveka and through these prakriyas, the things that separate me from Ishvara are also the things that separate me from you, when there is no separation at all. There's no separation at all. I am you. And then when you know that, then you understand people. You understand. Because I have the same, you are the self and you have a mind. I am the self. I have a mind. I have a buddhi. I have emotions. You have emotions. These things are all coming up and doing this and doing that. Like how Swamiji talks about the weather. Bhagishananda is always talking about the weather. Now, I always talk about the weather too, but I always give him credit for it because I'm so impressed. I'm so impressed by it. I love it. The weather's a little stormy right now. It's okay. And the weather better pass. Okay. Get a raincoat. It's like Federico told me the other day, he said, because it was starting to get cold, and he said, is it cold? For you and I said, no, I have warm clothes. And then he says, yeah, it's never cold. It's what clothes are you wearing? Mm-hmm. To never be cold, it's what clothes you're wearing. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's all. Mm-hmm.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
Cool.